for Donny Hathaway, mostly. Anyway, we're going to listen to the June 30th interview I did with Mike, who was back from Philly, and Jason Hoover, local soul singer I'm working on a film with, coming up next here on African Rhythms here on CITR 101.9 FM, UBC Radio. And welcome to another African Rhythms. In the summer, in late June 2017, I'm David Love Jones, and we have back Mike Ingram from Philly and Jason Hoover. Welcome back, guys.
Yes, indeed. Good evening, everybody. Nice. Happy Canada Day weekend and all that good stuff. Good to be back in BC.
Long weekend, Canada's birthday.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we were talking about some of Jason Hoover's history and how he came from Edmonton and how he grew up in the R&B soul scene in the 60s and into the mid-70s making a soul funk album. So we're going to cover another aspect of that a little bit later in the show. What is your musical relationship like with a gentleman named Donny Hathaway?
Oh, man, he was my love, man. I mean, I think everybody that did R&B fell deeply in love with Donny Hathaway because he was so unique, and until this day there's been nobody that can replace his beingness. And that's the word I have to use, is beingness. I mean, there's a lot of singers that can sing just as well. It was his beingness. It was Donny's beingness.
A gifted genius.
With Donny Hathaway, he was more than special. He was, what could I call it? Donny Hathaway, to this day, still has his unique sound, but he had something else, too. I think it has to do a lot, David, with his phrasing.
Yes.
I think his phrasing of the song.
For sure. Well, let's check him out now.
Yeah.
It's obvious to you that at that time our love is through, even though we love each other in a special way. I couldn't give you everything you wanted me to give. Here you are with the ring on your finger saying that you used to love me, when really it's not right for to be together, but darling, I still love you. So take me now and let me love you. That's all I really want to do. 'Cause after time is over, I know you'll be going back to him. Speak easy and release yourself. We'll always have the memory of our
Wow, what a groove. Donny Hathaway on African Rhythms. Huh. And you can hear, Mike, right at the end there, how it just merely is just a one-take studio thing. You know, like that's not been, there's no overdubs, things added. It could have been if it had ever come out.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing that probably drives record labels crazy, because A&R people, their job is to make sure that the talent is pushed forward the best way possible. You know, in that time frame in the 70s, you had funk, you had fusion, and all this other stuff was going on, and you had real singers and real performers. Very often, the people that were hired to do these jobs and take care of this talent, I won't say they didn't know what they were talking about, but they didn't really appreciate what they talked about. Jason was saying earlier about the phrasing, you know, you didn't hear that in anybody, and the first thing they'll say is, it's not commercial enough. And when they say it's not commercial enough, that's usually a kiss of death for an artist.
Right. In other words, though the person in power doesn't get it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but like you said, it was a little bit mercy me kind of beat going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From a phrasing standpoint, you hear a lot of that in his daughter, Layla. And that's why she is a supremely talented singer, and she understands music well. So it's no surprise that she and
Rochelle Farrell are
kindred spirits like that, because they're both really superior talents in that they understand the music they're singing.
Yeah, no, it's really good stuff. All right, well, we've got an interesting version of a track that we're familiar with, Women of the Ghetto, which I think you remember the Marlena Shaw. But
yes, I do.
Here is Doris Duke's version.
Damn.
Doris Duke here on African Rhythms. Woman of the Ghetto. 101.9 FM, CITR. I've got my special guests, Jason Hoover and Mike. Once again, you check out our podcast for our last show that we did together just a couple weeks ago. Next, we're going to go Belloid, and great lesser name that got overlooked. We'll do a little 20th Century Spotlight.
You played this a while ago, and I hadn't heard it in a long time, but it was an awesome track, this key.
Yeah, this is something special.
Well, I haven't heard it, so I'm ready.
Get into it.
And that is the Southside Movement. And that's our little 20th century record spotlight. Two tracks that are majorly good, but got majorly overlooked.
No kidding. A lot of talent there, my brother. You said Chuck Davis produced that first Beloit track. 20th Century Records had Chuck Davis, Gene Page, and Barry White all working for them at the same time there. So they were turning out some quality product. And that
master
definitely.
Master producers.
Yes, and that sounds like a disco track. Only because of the tempo and stuff, but I mean, the voice, the vocals, everything in that. That's a solid track.
Yes. The Southside Movement, it's getting into that 77 disco hustle kind of period.
Mm-hmm. But I think they're coming out of it. I mean, I think they've been there just by hearing what I heard. They've been there. They're trying to stretch it out to something else that's theirs. Mm-hmm. You know?
That's what you like about some guys to do with disco is they tried to get more adventurous, but
really?
Sometimes the A&Rs just didn't get it, like you're saying.
No.
Because you're arguing with the producers. The producers become the stars instead of the music. Mm-hmm. And in the disco era, that was what they were trying to do. They were taking away from the artists by creating the producing and that production madness ended up with a lot of schlocky stuff, but every now and then you had something that was quality. This is where we have to give credit to the Northern Soul movement, because there's an old 100 proof aged in soul track called One Man's Leftovers is Another Man's Meat. And the Northern Soul folks were responsible for making sure that all of these folks that were discarded. I mean, that Beloit track's a perfect example of that, because it sounded commercial. And I don't mean in a bad way. It was like, yes, this is something that, yes, should have been hot airplay.
Yeah.
But over in the UK, they understand music better. You know, this is to a lesser degree, this is no different than the bebop stuff. They made sure that these cats were appreciated and they enjoyed their music, and they made a whole movement out of this simply because of their love of the music.
Yeah, it's incredible how some of these tracks get discovered and how later such a revelation. Like the next track that we're going to listen to, Brazilian Rhyme, Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, I rocked that track many times, just that, what is it, 2 minutes
the
long.
Hook, yep.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You know, just at the end of their album. But who was to know there was actually an original studio full track that they made. So tonight, my friend Michael Ingram and Jason Hoover, we get to hear it. It's the full Brazilian Rhyme.
Yeah.
Bye.
African Rhythms with David Love Jones, Michael Ingham, and our special guest, Mr. Jason Hoover.
And welcome back. Let's go over what we heard. We were listening to some very special gospel funk from, I guess, probably around the late 70s, and that's called Heavenly Places.
That. Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty special.
That's like the early days of gospel. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good option.
And then Tom Brown, there's a slightly lesser known track from Tom Brown, the man that did Funkin' for Jamaica and Brighter Tomorrow.
Well, Funkin' in Jamaica was a hit. That was his only hit.
You know, it wasn't his only hit.
Yeah,
you know, it was the one that got the major play. But Tom Brown really
Come for a Ride.
Come for a Ride, Thighs High to the Sky. There was a lot of good stuff because I think Magic had three or four really great tracks that album Magic that he had. This is an earlier one that he did, Rock and Radio. So,
yeah, that's definitely a lesser known one, but it shows you that he had some staying power because he put out at least four or five albums. So, that was a reasonable run he had there for a jazz funk artist. I wouldn't say that's that easy, really.
No, it's not. And that goes back to what we were saying about that whole era, jazz fusion, all that stuff was going on. The producers are trying to kill this with disco. And it's like, real music always stands the test of time.
It does.
So, it's all about how we get exposed to it.
Yeah.
I think Jason was a perfect example when we were talking in the car about how you were saying you didn't hear James Brown until a lot later because of where you were. you know.
Till you came from Edmonton. Well, I remember in Calgary when I worked in a record store in 79, 80, 81, the stuff that was getting, more like 79, 80. But I was in Calgary then, and I remember the black folks were coming in and asking for Tom Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was big, Gap Band, you know, even Curtis Band. Blow.
You know, I didn't even think about that, but that's an interesting perspective because you have a record store.
Yeah.
And then, of course, to some degree, you got to keep, you know, in step with what people are listening to and whatnot. Mm. So it would be an epicenter.
Yeah.
You had more stuff than the radio stations did, because when I got here, the radio stations were terrible.
Yeah.
Which is one reason why CITR and Co-op and all of those meant so much. I mean, Seattle had the best station in the area, unfortunately.
I find that you're right, totally right, Mike. But, you know, I was spoiled with listening to, I guess, what was the station at that time? It was the call letters in Seattle, and it was, we listened to that. We didn't listen to any of our stuff up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I bet there was some good radio out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. That's
man. Oh, I was getting I used to go down to Seattle just to buy the records of stuff I wasn't hearing. Mm-hmm. And when I finally started to hear it, I was, my pocketbook came with
right. That happened after Trials of Jason Hoover. Yeah. Well, let's get back to your what we wanted to focus on a little bit was the one of the final things that happens with the original Epics was you playing on the CBC and hosting the whole show, you know, which they filmed.
That was a privilege, David, and it was a good privilege because nobody else did that. Nobody else was shot to do the show by themselves. I was the only one picked.
But did you get a phone call? Or
I was doing that show, Let's Go, and whatever else they called it. I was doing it like, I was paying my mortgage, man, on it.
Yeah.
You know, I was.
Yeah, you'd done previous shows where you'd done cover versions and you were on just part of the show, or maybe you did two numbers on the show, and then that went on for a little while.
That went on for quite a while. That was
about 3 years, I guess. Yeah. And then eventually, opportunity came knocking. Jimi Hendrix, which is one of the striking moments of what you did, on that 1968 show, you performed The Wind Cries Mary, and Jimmy Harmata takes the guitar solo?
Jimmy Harmata played the shit out of that, didn't he?
Yeah. No, that was good.
I think he played really wonderful. I was so proud of him, you know, because we didn't have rehearsal time, and we had, in those days, there was a time limit for the show. There was it was like, you couldn't waste a minute. Everything had to be like that. There was no repeat, so we had to be well rehearsed before we came to the show.
So you did all that live, mostly?
Everything was live.
Yeah, awesome. Well, let's check it out now. Yeah. 1968, Jason Hoover and one of the top groups, R&B groups, in the 60s in Vancouver in the incredible R&B scene. And here it is, The Wind Cries Mary, an historic moment in local black history.
But tonight we're going to bring you the top three blues tunes in Vancouver.
Their boxes and the clouds have all gone to bed. You can see happiness standing on downstream, footprints dressed in red, and the wind whispers merry. A broom is thoroughly sweeping of the pieces of yesterday's life. Somewhere a queen is weeping. Somewhere a king has no wife. And the wind cries.
traffic light, it turned blue tomorrow. Sat in emptiness down on my bed. The tiny island sat on down the street. This life that lived is dead. And the wind cried, Mary. But will the wind ever remember all the names it has known in the past? With this club, this old age, that has wisdom. But wisdom knows this will be the last. And the wind, it screams, Mary.
That is an incredible local moment. Jason Hoover and the Epics, live at the CBC.
Wow, David, I don't know where you get all this.
Thanks to Rob. Rob from Neptune is the major archivist of Jason Hoover's history when it comes to posters and even material
together. Mm-hmm.
He's even got unreleased stuff by you.
But just on the track alone is magnificent. I ain't just saying that because we buddies now. I mean, nobody does Hendrix. You know, we had Robin Trower and others trying the musical instrumental aspects of it, but there's only like 5 or 6 Hendrix songs that you can actually sing.
Yeah, that's true.
And nobody else would try something like that. Your phrasing was on point. It was as if I was listening to Jimmy, no joke.
Yeah,
and it's indicative of what you obviously were influenced by, because you had Jimmy, you had Sly. You know, and we heard one song from the last show that sounded like an old Sly track, so here you go, the vocals and whatnot, and this on point, and it's live one time. You know, yeah, but see, they weren't getting played on the radio.
That's the difference.
Exactly. So nobody really knew what was coming. And the fact that this stuff is going on and this stuff is being played is indicative of something bigger here we're talking about.
That's true.
No, but having said all of that, I want to get into the whole issue of the show because, you know, back in the day, we all grew up. I mean, at least I grew up in the States. I was listening to Shindig and Hullabaloo and all this stuff.
I did too.
And, you know, when the artists were coming on, you know, it was assumed, and I don't like assuming, but it was assumed that the artists were going to get paid to do original stuff. I mean, American Bandstand or Shindig comes on, Leslie Gore is going to come on singing "It's My Party and I Cry If I Want To." She's getting paid because of that. You know, so original material made all the difference in the world. So that's why I was asking, what happened regarding the music people up here? Why were they so adamant about you not singing original material?
It really is a complicated situation, being the only black singer in basically radio at that time, because I was one of the only recording artists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Little Daddy and the Bat Show, yes, they had, you know, No Monkey Business, that was but I had a multitude of songs. I was very fortunate to be picked to do this, Mike. I mean, I was like beside myself that they would let me have so much time at CBC, that they would let me have so much time on the radio station, FM stations, LG FM, and C-Fun FM.
Right.
I mean, I was spoiled because I was the only one, so they only had me to pick from, so it was great. It was great.
Well, CBC's national, so that's where I have to ask the question. After you did this, what happened to Jason Hoover? You would have thought that would have raised enough attention for everybody to understand he is a homegrown talent. He's got all this good stuff right here in front of you. How come you didn't promote him?
I was just very happy to be on a show. I was never into making myself something that I really wasn't. I wanted to be me and be exposed as me. So anytime I got to do my tune or my own picks of the songs I was going to do on TV, I was joyful. I was so happy, you know. It's awful when they squeeze the death out of you and make you do things that aren't really you.
Yeah.
And we had the top 5 on CBC show, and we had to do the top 5 tunes of that day.
Mm. Right. So, I mean, really, it was hard for you. I mean, you only just started to get heard when
That's
you
right.
changed the name The Trials of Jason Hoover. I mean, until then, it was all covers, you know. Finally, one of your songs gets out. But then with the Trials, I mean, it wasn't... Why was there no Epics album? I mean, if there had been an Epics album, there would have been some original.
Exactly.
But getting back to the 68 TV show. Yeah. So another track you did was George Clinton's first hit. You know, the Parliaments was early days for
I was down in Seattle every other weekend to pick up my records that they didn't have up here. And that's where I got all that stuff. When you heard me, friend, that was me. You know? Yeah. I didn't copy his style.
Well, I mean, to do Testify then, I mean, again, this is major local history. Here is Jason Hoover on national Canadian TV doing George Clinton. I mean, how does it get any cooler than that?
People didn't know who George Clinton was. That's the funny part.
Yeah, no one knew who George Clinton was. But okay, listeners, I think we're going to have to drop this for you now.
All right.
Hi, I hope you like soul music, because that's what we're presenting today on Let's Go. I'm Jason Hoover. These are the Epics.
Incredible. We're talking live in Vancouver in 1968, nationally broadcast TV show. George Clinton, Jason Hoover, and the Epics.
That we were unique. They loved it all the way from, I guess Montreal, all the way back to Vancouver, Victoria, man. It was anything. It was like we were starved for anything that was going to be for sure. Everybody at Canon wanted for sure.
Well, I guess the CBC folk liked your funky version of that. I mean, yeah, they didn't know George Clinton.
See, this much, I bet you guys heard it before we did, because in New York, you know, you had that locked thing. If you weren't recording for Columbia, Epic, or Atlantic Records, they weren't going to play you on regular radio. We heard that song on WWRL, which was the soul station, maybe about 2 months or so after
it was
that
hit.
Thing came out. Exactly. You know, so it was all after the fact, and... You know, I'm not surprised you heard it. I'm just surprised that there wasn't a Jason Hoover and the Epics album after the fact. So that's my point. You were getting positive feedback across country from everybody saying, we like this guy. We want to hear more of this guy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Okay. And that's how it worked for us. And I was very, very pleased. And I realized that I was taking things very seriously now, and I was really serious about my career.
Well, I mean, another track from this 1968 show is your version of Funky Broadway, which I think is a pretty badass funky track. Now, let's the listeners hear your version of Funky Broadway and let them decide for themselves how good this is. This is local funk here in Vancouver on a nationally broadcast show. Jason Hoover and the Epics doing Funky Broadway. That was Funky Broadway live here in Vancouver. A bit more like the raw funk version of the original Dyke and the Blazers, Mike and I were noticing.
Right? Oh, yes. Yeah, the way he came down on Name of, that's Dyke's version. That's Wilson did his own, but I like Dyke's. Dyke's was grittier.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's that Funky Broadway, that was a hell of a groove, you know, for a local track, brought across Canada. All right, well, we should mention tonight some sad news about Bobby Taylor, that he's having some quite serious surgery. We wish him all the best. We want to just send some good vibes to Bobby Taylor.
God bless him. He's far, far removed from the ordinary crowd singer. He was unique. Yeah. He was fantastic. Not too many people could phrase like Bobby.
Yeah. I feel bad for Bobby that, you know, he's been away and Hong Kong. We haven't got to appreciate him in recent years. I mean, I did get to interview him and went down to when he was playing locally, but he wasn't really appreciated enough locally. I mean,
that's
I remember
what happens
talking
when
to the media.
When you become
about
the local boy, you know, I can attest to that. When you are just great and people say, yeah, he's great, he's wonderful. Meantime, you're a local boy.
Rossini's didn't pay so well.
And no. It don't mix. No, it doesn't.
You know, Rossini's was giving him like $100, something like that. You know, I mean, you got Bobby Taylor, friggin', you know, one of the most incredible performers.
We do four songs, I get $100. Bobby, same thing, man.
Yeah, he did a lot more than four songs.
It was his set.
He had Red Robinson opening for him and whatever.
I was there, man. I saw the show. I wasn't on the show, but I was there for that. And
Bobby, he told me to come down. Like, when he found out that I was really into soul music, he was really happy that there was a local guy like me. So he really encouraged me to come down. And I didn't make it down one night. And he came by the shop. He's like, look, you're coming down, right? And I was like, okay,
This brings us back to the issue at hand, though. Yeah, because you got local talent, Canadian talent. mm-hmm. you know, you should be appreciating
of a major.
That. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, even in New York, as bad as New York was for finding talent and promoting talent, we still had New York bands that got some promotion before they went somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about people who are doing stuff that everybody heard, everybody did, everybody liked. So it's not like we're asking for favor here. It's just that the, whatever the apparatus was, whoever these gatekeepers were responsible for hindering this whole process.
They did
Bobby got his back to a degree by getting signed to Motown, but then he got even worse exploited by them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, being part of the corporation didn't really do him any favors.
No.
Well, Stevie had his way with him.
Oh, Stevie. He spoiled Stevie, man. Yeah. I mean, Stevie didn't have to go to court. I mean, talking about
I guess
David
Stevie made enough money that he was able to dictate the terms.
Exactly. Yes, and Stevie made a lot more money because of Marvin. Because if Marvin had not released What's Going On, it would have shut down Stevie's creative
flow.
There
would never been Inner Visions.
It wouldn't have been Inner Visions, exactly. Yeah. Talking about all of that other stuff, you couldn't credit anything. Marvin made the difference with everybody.
Marvin was the greatest of all times, as far as I'm concerned, for any Motown artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He had things that other people didn't have. I'm talking about things that I know about singers. And again, I'll mention again, it's phrasing. Phrasing is such and so important and how you make a song feel.
Yep. Well, getting back to here is somebody that is an incredible songsmith and phrasing, and that is Sending Love out to Hong Kong tonight to our good friend Bobby Taylor. We're hoping he can make it through this surgery from his second Motown album, Little Miss Sweetness.
Yeah, that's a great tune as well.
That is The Masqueraders, and that's a song, Mike, that we never got to play back in some of the old shows because, again, kind of an unknown.
It was. You know, The Masqueraders didn't do a lot of up-tempo stuff. You know, they were kind of like the Delphonics in that aspect. You know, they'd hear, you did those soulful ballads and stuff, but this was totally different. That's up-tempo. Sounds Northern Soul to me, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. That's Northern Soul. Basically, whoever was uncovering copies of that wasn't sharing. You know, I mean, I think that with Northern Soul, some of it's about secrets and exclusivity. Mm-hmm. So, sadly, sometimes that doesn't actually help the exposure to the music.
That's true, but, you know, at least it's getting played, and... Yeah. I know there had to be more than a couple of people whose careers were revived simply because the Northern Soul folks embraced them, you know, and gave them
without
an opportunity.
Without a doubt,
But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. You just did a Hendrix cover.
Oh, yeah.
You did a George Clinton cover.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a Dyke
and the Blazers
/ Wilson Pickett cover.
Yeah.
Now, all of this was in your comfort zone. What does your original music sound more like?
Definitely Stax sound. If you could hear all the tapes I have at home, and maybe someday you'll be able to, mm-hmm. my rehearsals, my picking songs that we would practice that we hoped we were going to use, was all Stax-like. We stayed away from Bobby Taylor and Motown as much mm-hmm. as we possibly could. Mm-hmm.
That was
that
smart.
Because we didn't get a real full shot of Stax and what they were about. We knew Cropper and Duck Dunn and all that stuff.
Yep.
We knew that they were Jackson, Booker T. The thing about Booker T. Jackson is that I guess it took me about 3 years to realize that the Booker T was black.
I mean, all we heard
about was Cropper and Duck Dunn and the drummer. We knew the drummer was black. We knew that. And there was nobody could drum like that guy. You know?
Yeah, sure, there was definitely some good crossover. Actually, Booker T. Jones was definitely a brother. But the groove they laid down, definitely, I can feel that was something you were more at home with. But I had to ask that for clarification.
Well, you did. Good job. No, I was Stax all the way, man. I thought... Motown, which I loved, was too smooth for me. My voice was...
But they were designed to clean it up. That was their intent.
My phrasing...
Although that's what you did in the earlier days of the covers on Let's Go or Motown.
Oh, yeah. I had to. They didn't know much about Stax. Yeah. It was Motown that was handling it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, listen, we're going to wrap up this African Rhythms, and we're going to go out with another Northern Soul track.
Yes!
Nothing But Heartaches, The Flirtations.
They actually played this on WABC. This must have been a huge seller because... They played this almost immediately.
And this truly did become a Northern Soul anthem.
Yeah.
All right. Well, take it out, Mike.
Well, for everybody out there, Canada Day, please play nice, go safe. You want your gift from A to B and back to A-OK. And always remember that if you want to know where the soul trees go, the roots can be found right here on African Rhythms.
Peace. Everybody here is qualified, especially my man over here from Philly.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jason.
Thank you. Yeah, well, hey, man, I'm just so happy to do your show. You know that. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have you back. And coming up at the top of the hour, Spoken Word Radio in Skulls Hall.
Oh, that sounds good. Well, that was a good show, guys.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.